everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our program on this midweek edition. It is Wednesday, the last full week of October already, the 25th, 2023. Tom Fairbanks, I'm telling you, the Buckmaster Bungalow up in the central foothills, once again, the epicenter for a monster storm.
The bungalow got blasted again.
Good Lord. I mean, once again, we've got all sorts of usual storm damage. I mean, it seems like half the mountain comes down in our backyard, and the little bridge we have, a lot of problems. I'm lucky I got home yesterday. Some of those intersections over at Craycroft and Grant, it was like, who's going to be first to get stuck? And thank goodness it wasn't me. Anyway, we're in the green things. We're going to talk about the weather with Zach Guido about climate in a few moments. It's always serendipitous to have him on after one of these kind of weather events. We're in the green things, Zocalo Village Studio, and our studio is on the campus of Bustos Media Tucson, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This radio station is 1030 KVOI, like The Voice, like Tucson's trusted voice for news and local talk. Worldwide live listening on my show, my website, buckmastershow.com. Also the place for all your podcasts. You can listen to the show live, and of course, I've got 12 and a half, almost 13 years of podcasts available at buckmastershow.com for our telephone interviews. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The number is 790-2040, of course, area code 520. If you'd like to talk with Zach Guido about climate and the weather, Dr. Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, acronym is AIR, A-I-R, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. And Zach is with us on the guy on the live line. Zach, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing well. Thanks, and sorry I can't join you in the office.
Yeah, I think you made the right decision, and I confirmed it when you let me know last night you had picked up a bug, and I thought maybe this was from your extensive traveling over to Bangladesh and halfway around the world, but it was something the little one may have picked up and brought home.
Yeah, well, when you have a 4-year-old who goes to daycare, you get periodically, frequently sick. So I decided not to subject your office to a little cold that I've picked up. So
well, good.
But yeah, happy to talk about the climate. And you know, you probably know a little bit more than I do. I've been gone, 4 weeks out of the last five. So it's nice to hear that you got some significant rain yesterday.
Yes.
It happened a little bit at my house, but not to that extent.
Again, the Buckmaster Bungalow, the epicenter, this is the third kind of major event since July. The rain gauge showed over 2 inches in our backyard and about a quarter of an inch of hail, which stayed on the ground until dark, most of it. Very odd, but that was also kind of the footprint signature of those other two big events we had at our house in July. So my question for you, where in the heck did this storm come from yesterday? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so there, if we go back in like the last month, I believe the last significant event was sometime in the mid of September. So it's been a little bit more than a month that most of Tucson hasn't experienced any rain. And we've had this persistent sort of high pressure system, parked over the region, also delivered to us really warm conditions. Like, I wasn't here, but I checked in from afar and people were like, it feels like summer. We had, I think, the latest or one of the latest 100 degree temperature days, you know, October, what was it, 20th or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was, Zach, so it was the latest 100 degree for sure. I think the other one was October 16th. So it really busted through that with really not only the latest 100, but really excessive temperatures for October.
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking at the data now at the airport, and on average, it was 5 degrees above average for the first 25 days. So, I mean, that's pretty substantial. So,
yeah.
You know, the cause of that was that and it was sort of an extension of what we had for the monsoon season. We had this ridge of high pressure that didn't quite move far enough north for us to have a vigorous monsoon, and you know, led to pretty warm temperatures throughout, and that persisted. That sort of broke down this last couple days, and there was also a tropical storm, and I'm hesitating because I'm trying to recall in my memory what hurricane strength it reached, but it was Norma, and it sort of wafted up and affected like Cabo San Lucas area. We have another one right now actually that just slammed into Acapulco. But Norma, there was pushed some moisture north that I believe this low pressure system that was sort of sweeping down from our northwest helped entrain and drew on some of that moist tropical air and led to quite extensive rain that appears to have been most intense right around where you live.
Of course. It always seems to always happen, at least in 2023. And a quick note about the situation in Acapulco, which is a city of a million people and a very, very well-known tourist center. The storm has winds. It's died down now because it hit the mountains. Acapulco kind of sits there on the ocean, and then they've got these really high Sierra Madre mountains to the east. It hit the mountains, but when it made landfall at 165 mile per hour wind, Zach.
Yeah, that's right. This was really, it was tragic and interesting. So it reached, it unexpectedly intensified rapidly and reached a Category 5 hurricane. And the forecast sort of missed this one in terms of the intensification and the speed. And, you know, I just did a little bit of reading, and it ended up becoming a really difficult storm to forecast. And I think people in Acapulco only had like maybe a 24-hour, 30-hour alert ahead of time. So it was sort of a nightmare scenario is what they were saying. But what ended up leading to its intensification is that it passed over right out off the coast of Acapulco. There was an area of really warm water that really fueled the storm. And then you also had the sort of atmospheric dynamics. You had this really strong wind field that ended up like acting like a ventilator, sort of like what you would do if you had a fanning a fire, and it helped produce a lot more heat and just created that explosive storm. It ended up increasing in wind speed over 100 miles per hour and within 24 hours, which is really quite rapid.
Yeah, that is.
So that's hitting. I mean, it already hit as you suggested, but I don't believe the full extent of the damage has been reported yet.
All right, let's look at these numbers. The numbers for the year, when all is said and done so far, it looks like it's pretty much not at my bungalow, but at the airport where they had 19 hundredths, about a quarter of an inch, less than a quarter of an inch from that storm yesterday, putting us right at about normal, a little over 8 inches for the year, Zach Guido.
Yeah, and I think like that airport is a little bit misleading, just if we like think about, you know, the monsoon. I mean, the airport, I believed, got you know, 75% of its average, but it was one of the few stations that was anywhere near that, like basically across all of Arizona. So it was one of those places that just like accidentally got lucky with the monsoon. So it's a little bit misleading in terms of, you know, thinking about the yearly statistics. At the moment, I'm drawing a blank on what the end of last winter did, but I believe we had a fairly good winter. And just for the most part, this monsoon season was one of, you know, top five dry across Arizona. It rivaled, in my mind, 2020. And yeah. I think, Bill, the last time I was on, we were sort of near the tail end of it. And, you know, it wasn't quite as bad as 2020, but it certainly, you know, was much worse in the last two that we experienced. So the airport, yeah, the airport might look okay, but that's boosted really by an okay rainfall situation for the monsoon that just didn't play out in the near vicinity and actually across the entire Southwest. So,
well, they ought to move the station to my backyard. It will turn out like to be the road to Maui or to Han or something. Anyway, Zach, let's pause right here. When we come back, we've got for the first time in 4 years, El Nino is now in place. What could that mean for Southern Arizona? NOAA, the National Weather Service, is out with their winter forecast. And so is the Farmer's Almanac, which miraculously seems to be pretty darn accurate over its, I don't know what, almost 200 years of forecasting. Anyway, let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's getting ready for Thanksgiving already. So you can put your order in for your dinner rolls and your pies, at least start thinking about it. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We're going to pause right here. More with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zilkalo Village studio. How those plants in my backyard handled the hail and all the rain yesterday, still to be determined how much of that I will lose, but seems like a run over to Green Things will be in order coming up pretty soon. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Their 13-acre site has everything you need for the garden, and they have some beautiful accessories at Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com, ZocaloVillage.com are your two websites. They're in their 53rd year of business. In other words, they didn't get off the bus yesterday, and they are open daily. He didn't get off the bus yesterday, but he might have just gotten off a plane within the last couple of days. This is a man on the move. Dr. Zach Guido, assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR. How was your trip to Bangladesh?
It was long.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 15-hour flight from... They're actually 23 hours in the air. So, but oh, it was, you know, Bangladesh is a wild place. A lot of people and just really interesting work and really great people. So, I feel very fortunate to experience that side of the world. So,
isn't half of Bangladesh like on a floodplain?
Oh man, I think more than half. I mean, that was the most striking thing to me when I first visited there. I mean, massive rivers, the Brahmaputra, the Meghna, the Ganges, like, and yeah, people live right at basically sea level or on the floodplains of these rivers. And it's no wonder that, it's no wonder that flooding is quite frequent. I mean, these rivers drain the Himalayas, and you have the monsoon, you have a really vigorous monsoon there. So, I marvel at their ability to, withstand the challenges. But they do it.
Well, some may have some challenges if you don't like snow and low temperatures, cause that's at least, I guess you could say that would be in the winter forecast every year, but NOAA, the National Weather Service organization, is out with their winter forecast. First time in 4 years, Zach, we have El Nino firmly in place.
Yeah, we do. And it's after 3 years or three winters of La Nina conditions, we get its opposite phase, El Nino. And there's expectation, Bill, that it's going to be, it's likely to be a strong event, what that means really is we would just have a little bit more confidence in the signals, the rainfall signals, when there's, a stronger event. Except it's a little bit of an interesting situation this year, and NOAA's forecasts kind of reveal it. And you might otherwise expect, traditionally, when we have an El Nino event, the Southwest just has greater chances for being wetter than average. And that's sort of what we normally expect, particularly with a stronger event like this year. However, the forecasts are sort of calling for, they don't really know. And part of the reason is because the sea surface temperatures around the globe are just almost all warm. And that is going to change, likely it's going to change the atmospheric dynamics and the other kinds of dynamics that change the airflow patterns in ways that we're just not confident, or the forecasters just aren't confident in what that'll actually mean. So I think it's like going to be a really interesting season. It can go either way, is the official forecast. We might otherwise think that we're going to get wetter weather here in the Southwest. And La Niñas can bring snowfall, like you suggested. They often have lower or higher snow lines associated with them because they can pick up warm, moist air from the tropics. But it really could go either way this year. So I don't know what to expect.
Well, Zach,
but we have something to think about and something that will play a pretty important role for our winter, whatever it ends up being, though.
Did you know that the Old Farmer's Almanac is the longest continuously published journal in America? It's 230 years old this year, and they claim anywhere from 70 to 80% accuracy, and they claim when it comes to precipitation, they even do better. I think it's almost 95%. So who knows? So many of these predictions, Zach, you know, throw the old dartboard.
I mean, seasonal forecasting, particularly during the monsoon, I feel like it's like that. I also think that, you know, forecasting, even weather forecasting, is difficult. But we have remarkably progressed in our ability to forecast conditions over the near term, hours to up to 7 days. It's been really quite an impressive advancement in science over the last, 50, 60 years. You know, when it comes to seasonal forecasting, I mean, our accuracy is not nearly what it is for weather forecasts, but there is stuff there. There is, like, our understanding of the physics of the system, the signals in the system, like El Nino, like trends, like we can hedge our bets. It's always framed in sort of a probabilistic framework, so we're never definitive. Right. We're like, there's greater chances. There's maybe a 60% chance that we're going to have a wetter winter and a 40% chance that we're going to have a drier winter. But that's how we get around it. So it's not like we're just guessing. At times, those signals are less strong and our confidence is like this winter is not very much. And so, we sort of shrug our shoulders and say it's as good as the flip of a coin. But at other times, seasonal forecasting, does provide a little bit of extra information there. So, again, I would say that this year is a little bit of a special case, and we might otherwise think that it's going to be a wet winter. But just the state of the oceans around the globe it is striking how warm the sea surface temperatures are. It's also striking how warm the global temperature is. Like, since I think April, we've had the warmest month on record for globally, and that's likely to persist. So there's some interesting changes that are really I think throwing a wrench into some of the forecasts in the near term.
All right, Zach, before we let you go, and we've got about 2 minutes to go. So when we go back, if we went back about 4 years with the last El Nino event, I wonder what that meant for Southern Arizona, whether it did hold up. Kind of putting you on the spot here, but I don't know how that held up the last time we had a full El Nino as far as precipitation here in the desert Southwest.
Yeah, like, that's where you're challenging my memory. My colleague is like the climate historian and would be able to rattle off, I think, the specific rainfall and temperature signals associated with those years. What I do remember is our first year of the La Niña, it unfolded like we thought it otherwise would. And the La Niña brings sort of a dry signal. And then it sort of the second year, I believe it broke down a little bit, and we might have experienced slightly above average rainfall. And I don't have that data handy, so I can't speak specifically. But I would say this: generally speaking, the statistics of El Nino are dry signal and La Niña are wet signal. They bear out their statistics. So more times than not, we would expect a dry during a La Niña and a wet during an El Niño. So they hold more times than not. In any one season, they may not follow those patterns, but you know, that's just the way it goes. There's a lot of influences on the climate system. So you have to have really strong signals, and sometimes there's competing signals that really make for a difficult forecast.
All right, Zach, glad you're back home. Are you home for a while now or what?
I'm not going anywhere for a while. I'm very happy about that,
too. I guess so. Yeah. All right. That was a lot of time in the air. I think you said 23 hours. Woo! Wow.
Yep, 23 straight up. Not straight, but 23 yeah. hours. 15 hours on one leg, so pretty long flight.
Oh, man. All right, Dr. Zach Guido, we'll look forward to your next visit. We'll book you in a couple of months or less. Thanks, Zach.
Fantastic. Thanks, Bill.
All right, take a break right here. Our quarterly What Are You Reading These Days segment. Our friends Bruce and Greg are in the house. They'll be regular guests here every quarter. We're going to talk about reading and what folks are reading, at least what they're reading and what they recommend, right after we take a break on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Time for our quarterly segment. I just named it this morning. It's now titled, What Are You Reading These Days with Bruce and Greg? Writer, journalist, editor, photographer, and publisher Gregory McNamee, who is the author of 8 books, including Tortillas, Tiswin, and T-Bones. Greg, quickly, what's Tiswin again? for folks who don't know.
It's a sort of a beer made out of corn.
Beer made out of corn.
Good and good for you.
Okay. Healthy, huh? That's a food history of the Southwest. One of his other books of note, Gila, The Life and Death of an American River. We should really do a Silver City Grant County commercial around that book. We'll do that. We'll do that next break. Mr. McNamee is the editor of Zocalo, an arts and culture magazine covering Tucson and Southern Arizona. He also operates Sonora Word Works, an editorial and publishing service. And Bruce Dingus is here. Bruce is retired from the Arizona Historical Society, where he was editor of the Journal of Arizona History. He was a judge of the Southwest Books of the Year competition for more than three decades. And I think, Greg, you're still a judge, right?
I am, yeah.
And how many years have you been on board with that?
A couple
decades?
I believe I'm in my sixth or seventh year or something like that. It seems like a lifetime, but...
Yeah, a little bit of a lifetime. Anyway, let's get right at it, what you guys are reading, what you have recommendations for our equestrian fans. And we had a whole segment about Tucson's horse community yesterday on the show, so this is very apropos. A lot of people are into horses, Greg, in Southern Arizona, as you probably know.
My wife is one of them, yes. And when people are into horses, they're really into horses.
You betcha. So what's this book? It goes back to, harkens back to kind of early days of horse racing in the Bluegrass State?
Yeah, this is a book by a woman named Kim Wickens called Lexington, The Extraordinary Life and Turbulent Times of America's Legendary Racehorse. And Lexington was born in 1850, and that was a time when horse racing was... It was the national sport. It was before baseball. It was before anything, and it was just huge, and people bet fortunes on it just as they do today. And Lexington was a thoroughbred who made money hand over fist for its owner, and not only a magnificent racehorse who won purses in the equivalent of millions and millions of dollars today, but also a prodigious begetter of offspring. So it had 540 known descendants, of which...
How many?
540 known descendants. 13 of the thoroughbreds that have won the Triple Crown, 12 of them are descendants. Seattle Slough, Man O' War, Secretariat, Sea Biscuit, all of them were in his bloodline.
Whoa.
And, but not just that, but also his descendants figure in other ways. George Armstrong Custer rode a descendant of Lexington's into battle at Little Bighorn.
Wow.
Yeah, and a fairly recent descendant, of course, in those days. So Lexington's skeleton itself, once he was finished with his business, and he died at the age of 25, which is a good long life for a horse, his skeleton was packed off to the Smithsonian, and there it was forgotten for about a century. It was found in an attic and loaned to the International Museum of the Horse in Lexington, Kentucky, which I visited this summer. And after they put it on display there at the International Museum of the Horse, they pretty much said, "You guys keep this. We don't want it back at the Smithsonian." So it's quite the draw. So when you're in Lexington, that's a thing to do.
As a little kid, I almost died after feeding a horse some sugar cubes in outside Lexington. I was playing around. My older brother and I were feeding the horses sugar cubes, and then I kind of wandered away and almost got nailed by a truck on the old Dixie Highway. So luckily, Dad pulled me back at just the last moment. Otherwise, I would have been history in Lexington. So there you go. All right, Bruce Dingus, what's on? Let's get going here. We got Leo Banks, well-known local author.
Well, if I can interject here, just by sheer coincidence, I wasn't aware of the nonfiction book that Greg just described, but I've just came back from a trip up the St. Lawrence Seaway and down the New England coast, and as my reading material, I was picked up a novel by Geraldine Brooks called Horse, and it's the same story in fictionalized version. Brooks moves back and forth between past and present, and she takes this real-life story of Lexington and its African-American trainer and turns it into a story of a century and a half of sports, scientific inquiry, and race relations. And her book begins when a Nigerian-born art student stumbles upon a 19th-century painting of a horse at the same time that an Australian-born Smithsonian Institute intern comes into contact with the unidentified remains of Greg, a skeleton that Greg talks about. As the two of them work to unsort the mystery of their behind their discovery and their evolving feelings for each other, she transports readers back to 1850s Kentucky, where an enslaved boy grooms this remarkable foal. Brooks is, she's been really an accomplished writer, one of my favorites, and she just really shines in this historical novel. The point is to illustrate the difficulties of race relations and the injustices that the slaveholding South perpetrated that resonate even down to today. So she makes it a much, much broader story, just a great read.
Well, why don't we keep it with you, Bruce, here about Leo Banks, The Flying Z is his new book.
Well,
Leo has a lot of fans here.
Yeah, he should. There was a time when Leo, who was then an award-winning columnist for Tucson Weekly, and I would just take any chance we had and climb into my pickup truck and head down to Patagonia to spend the day with J.P.S. Brown, Joe Brown. Brown was a fifth-generation Arizona cowboy and the author of a classic novel, Forests of the Night. He was the kind of guy you often read about, but you seldom meet him in real life. And I couldn't help but find echoes of those visits in Leo's latest book that's a gritty ranch romance set in present-day Arizona-Sonora borderland. When a pampered Eastern college girl's car breaks down, she's thrown into the arms of a rugged cowboy whose family spread is in the sights of a Mexican drug lord who's using it as a drug corridor into the U.S. It's sort of Shane meets a thousand years of solitude as she sort of absorbs the history of the region and the magic of the landscape and becomes involved in a fight to avenge a murder and hang on to the ranch. Banks knows this country and he knows its people. Flying Z is an entertaining read, and it's also an honest portrait of modern-day border life. Fortunately, Banks leaves the door open, I think, to a sequel, so we may not have reached the end of the road on the Flying Z story. Hopefully not.
How many books does he have?
I believe this is his fourth. I might be wrong. He's going all sorts of genres, mysteries, and now a sort of a romance. Mm-hmm. And he's just a really talented writer. It's just an enjoyable read.
All right. It's what folks are reading, at least our folks, Bruce and Greg. They've got some great recommendations. Take a break right here. And then we'll talk more books and some great suggestions for your autumn reading. We'll pause. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. we grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. If you're looking for a great road trip, I love New Mexico, especially in October. The autumn is perfect over there in Silver City, right there where the Gila National Wilderness would make for some great autumn hiking. Check out Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico before you make the three-hour drive. I would take a quick look at their website, southwestnewmexico.org. More about great things to do, really nice places to stay in the area, and some great places to dine as well. Gregory McNamee with us. Greg, how are you?
I'm about ready to go to Silver City and get something to eat.
Well, that's why I came to you, because you wrote a book, Gila, The Life and Death of the American River. They do have a couple of really great Mexican restaurants there. I'm trying to think of the main drag there in Silver City. It's good places to eat.
Yeah, it's a nice little town. It's a good place to get away. Go and hang out at the El Palacio Hotel.
There you go. Yeah. It is time, and we are doing our quarterly segment. I've named it, What Are You Reading These Days with Bruce and Greg. Gregory McNamee is the author of 8 books, and Bruce Dingus is here as well. Bruce retired from the Arizona Historical Society. He was editor of the Journal of Arizona History and longtime judge of Southwest Books of the Year. Greg is still one of the judges. Greg, let's talk about a book about George Harrison. It's getting a lot of publicity. The writer is Philip Norman.
Yeah, Philip Norman is a longtime Beatles biographer, and I'm going to throw in another book alongside of that, but I'm a fool for, you know, some people are into horses, I'm into the Beatles.
There you go. And, I saw the Beatles in August of 1966, second tour.
Wow.
At Comiskey Park in Chicago. Go ahead.
Wow. Well, I need to, you know, to make 9 bows.
Yes.
for that. Well, I'm a fool for anything having to do with the Beatles, and particularly George Harrison. I think, you know, in the end, he's probably my favorite. And as it was always said, George was the quiet Beatle. As it turns out, he wasn't always that quiet. He just mumbled a lot under his breath and grumbled. And had lots and lots of complaints, and he amassed so many songs that he wrote himself that he wasn't allowed to record, that he came bursting out of the gate with his first solo album, the first post-Beatles solo album, which was called All Things Must Pass.
With My Sweet Lord on it?
Right.
Yeah.
Just
that was
a magnificent,
huge hit, that album. Yeah.
It was, indeed, yeah. And it's one that I still listen to today. Well, anyway, Harrison, as it turns out, you know, he had that kind of saintly image, a kind of a Hare Krishna follower and things like that. But as his wife, Olivia, once said, what's George got his hands into today, the prayer beads or the cocaine?
Oh, my goodness.
He was complicated, like everybody else is complicated, and this life rounds him out. It sort of takes a little bit of his saintliness away, and restores him to, you know, good old dirty rock and roll. And The other book I want to mention is by a man named John Swed called Cosmic Scholar, The Life and Times of Harry Smith. Anybody who played folky music back in the day, including George Harrison, would have learned something from Harry Smith's anthology of American folk music. Well, Harry Smith was a guy who, if you saw him walking down the street in New York, you'd say, that's the filthiest bum I have ever seen in my entire life. He had no visible means of support. He never had a cent to his name. And yet he amassed a massive collection, multi-million dollar collection of art, had a huge personal library, and had records in multiple apartments spread out through New York that people wound up paying for. And from them he crafted, from those albums, he crafted this wonderful collection of American folk music that taught Bob Dylan, that taught the Peter, Paul, and Mary, the whole folk scene back in the day, and it extends to this day. There have been tribute albums by the likes of Wilco and stuff. And so I was going to simply say, if you read only one book about a mad scientist who's not really a scientist this quarter, that's the book to read, Cosmic Scholar.
I'm thinking about that coffee house in Chicago in 1963 when I saw Peter, Paul, and Mary. We were seated on cushions and drinking hot chocolate or coffee. I was too young, I guess, to drink a lot of, I was too young to drink alcoholic beverages, which were being served, but it was a great concert, or not really a concert, kind of intimate setting. Still remember that. Wonderful, wonderful memory. All right, Bruce Dingus, what do you have for us?
I saw the Rolling Stones at the Old Erie Crown Theater in Chicago in 1964, 65. It's still the greatest concert I've seen.
Well, this is really weird, because I think I was at that same conference.
I paid $15.
And that was at McCormick Place, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you and I were both in the audience there.
Wow.
Do you recall, because that stage came up, the rising, the stage came right up, and the opening number, as I recall, was Under My Thumb.
I don't have that vivid a memory of that. I just remember Mick Jagger at age 24 was something to behold.
Yeah. Wasn't he wearing like a striped T-shirt? Do you remember
yes.
that?
Yes. Yes.
Kind of similar to what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a, anyway.
I was going to say, the resemblance is striking.
Oh, no. No, you. All right. Let's talk about The Last Ranger.
Yeah, so much for memory lane.
Yeah.
For my money, Peter Heller is one of the best unknown writers we have, novelists. His latest book is The Last Ranger. And in this, Heller introduces readers to our threatened wilderness environment viewed through the eyes of a seasoned game warden dealing with tourists and poachers in the remote reaches of Yellowstone National Park. Heller, who's an outdoor writer, has proven in five previous novels his serious chops as a gifted storyteller. A reputation of this latest book, I think, just enhances. Vandalism and the attempted murder of a wolf biologist set in motion a compelling plot in which flawed characters deal with their personal demons in a setting that's both breathtaking and dangerous. Predators, animal, and human, Heller seems to suggest, have more in common than we may recognize or be willing to admit.
Well, that sounds interesting. Again, The Last Ranger.
The Last Ranger.
Got another one. Greg, do we have time to shoot off one more for us?
I'm going to throw out just one book that I liked very much, and it's a very odd book by a man named Alexander Stilla called The Sullivanians. It's about a New York City cult that ran from the late 1950s to the early 1980s.
And it Sullivanians?
Sullivanians.
Sullivanians.
Yes, a psychologist named Henry Sullivan, who's still known today. But these were followers of Sullivan's who were all very smart people, lawyers and doctors and computer programmers, business executives, the folk singer Judy Collins, who you probably have seen, somewhere or another down the line, too. All of them were drawn into this kind of vast Ponzi scheme that involved, in the end, it involved polygamy, it involved giving all your money to, the beloved master, children being taken from their parents and raised by strangers in this very, very weird community. Well, let's just put it this way. It was strange even as cults go. And so if you read only one book about mad scientists that doesn't involve Harry Smith, then make it The Sullivanians by Alexander Stella. Very, very, very good book.
I have never heard of this story. This is, you know, well, it's the reason I do this program every day is to learn something. And I just learned something because, again, I've got all sorts of memories about seeing Judy Collins. And, well, we don't need to go back down memory lane because that would cut into Bruce Dingus's time as he gives us one more. You want to do Picturing Sabino?
Yeah, David Lazaroff. He's done a book on Sabino Canyon years ago, maybe two decades ago. But he's got a new one out. It's called Picturing Sabino, A Photographic History of a Southwestern Canyon. And this is just a great book to set through and page through. He's sat down and paged through. He's accumulated hundreds of photographs in the Historical Society and elsewhere. David himself has worked at the canyon as an interpreter for a decade. I think he still works there. And he's got a really whimsical style of writing. It's just a fun book to read. And you'll see a part of Sabino Canyon that we just kind of take for granted and don't know the history behind. I think probably the most startling thing that people are going to realize is that there's in the past century, there have just been ongoing efforts that have always failed, thank God, to dam the canyon and to use it as a reservoir, but they've always fallen through. And you can just imagine what we'd have lost if the promoters and civic leaders had succeeded in damming the thing.
That is so weird. I've got a weird segue for you about Sabino Canyon. In 1968, I was shooting the Judy Collins concert, and there was a nice spread in the Arizona Wildcat. But I picked up Judy Collins's band at the airport and to take them to the Holiday Inn. This is 1968, and they said they wanted to see some of Tucson. So I drove them. In those days, you could drive up to the top of Sabino Canyon. Somewhere I've got some photographs of me with the band members up in Sabino Canyon in 1968. Wow, that is really...
I'm going to trump you. I saw Paul McCartney in Sabino Canyon once.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Probably about 82. Did, you know, exchange nothing but sort of meaningful nothingnesses, appreciative glance toward him, and that was it.
But how weird. The serendipity. There's enough serendipity here in the studio. You could cut it with a knife. I mean, that Bruce Dingus and I were both at the Rolling Stones concert at McCormick Place. What was the name of the theater?
The Airy Crown Theater.
Airy Crown Theater.
It has since burned down.
I saw a lot of great acts at the Beach Boys, the Association, a British Invasion. They call it British Invasion. Ferry Cross the Mercy with...
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
There you go. Herman's. Anyway, we're out of time. Could talk 60s music for a long time, but we're going to have to run. Greg and Bruce, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Your
Christmas edition will be coming up the week before Christmas with some Christmas book buying ideas. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Greg and Bruce, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.